Hello again, and welcome to the third and final Planet Beyond Ocean Decade shortcast, recorded live on the last day of the UNESCO conference here in Barcelona. If you're at the event, don't miss this last chance to visit our on-site studio in the foyer of the conference center and join in the conversations we're having with speakers, delegates, and the wider ocean community. If you're not able to attend, you can listen to a live stream of the plenary sessions on the Ocean Decade Conference website. With me now is Jyotika Vermani, Executive Director of the Schmidt Ocean Institute, a non-profit foundation established in March 2009 by Eric and Wendy Schmidt. The Institute's goal is to advance innovative oceanographic research and discovery through technological advancement, collaborative research, outreach and education, and open sharing of information. It provides collaborators with free ship time aboard their research vessel, Falkor 2, and expert technical shipboard support. Collaborating researchers and institutions on board the vessel commit to openly share and communicate the outcomes of their research, including raw observations and data. Jyotika, thank you for joining me today. This drive for collaboration and sharing is evident here at the Ocean Decade Conference, which is supported by the Schmidt Ocean Institute. Perhaps to start, can you tell us why you think it's important to be here at the Ocean Decade Conference?
Well, thank you for inviting me, first of all, to be here in lovely Barcelona. I think, this is the first Ocean Decade Conference. The previous one was a casualty of COVID, I think. But we're pretty much approaching the midway point for the Ocean Decade. And I think it's really important to be here because we need to take stock of where we've got to in the last few years, while we still have time to look forward to beyond 2030 and take appropriate actions if needed to achieve that vision. I also think it's great to be here because there are many colleagues from around the world here in all sorts of different aspects of oceanology and ocean science, and ranging from the science itself, but also to the art world. And so weaving all of that together has really emphasized how inclusive the Ocean Decade is.
Do you know, I'm so pleased you raised that, because that's one of the things that, do you know, I didn't expect. I didn't expect to be surrounded by so much wonderful art and people and artists all sharing this important message.
So actually, at Schmidt Ocean Institute on board Falkor 2, in addition to the scientists, we also have an artist at sea program. So we have a collection of over 160 pieces, and some of which you see here. But it's a very small fraction that you see here. But the goal is to convey the science to different audiences. And again, on that, building on that theme of inclusivity, which is what the Ocean Decade is about, to bring in people and to learn about oceans and the science that's taking place in different forms. Not everyone's going to read scientific publications, but they'll go to an art gallery or sculpture or music. We had a wonderful performance here earlier this week, and a musical performance. So, yeah, it's just a weaving together of different ways of conveying the science to different audiences.
It's a clear indication of people thinking way beyond the traditional boundaries. I've got a specialized vessel and we do specialized photography or analysis at the bottom of the ocean. No. It's much more than that.
Absolutely. I mean, you've seen here dresses So that's fashion. And actually, that's a separate program we've got going, which I'll mention as well. But you've seen art, you've seen video, taking some of the hydrothermal vent data that was collected. We've got painters and sculptors. I mean, it varies from cruise to cruise. But just going back to the dresses, we are actually partnering with Necton on a program called Ocean Rising. And that is bringing art into different cultural sectors, including fashion, sports, music, food. So trying to meet people where their interests lie and bring the ocean into those spaces.
Yeah. You mentioned that video. I mean, the photography, the video is so stunning. I mean, people just walk up and just are fixated by the imagery from great depths.
It's part of our ROV Sebastian's set of tools. So we have a 4K video camera system on board, and ROV Sebastian, it's an underwater robot, can go down to 4,500 meters depth. And having that 4K video capability really allows us to see some of the other inhabitants of our planet in amazing color. The other advantage of having a piece of equipment like that on board is testing prototype technologies. And so we've been integrating a lot of technologies on board to eventually move towards in situ biodiversity detection and identification.
Wow. So looking back at the first 2 days here in Barcelona, can you share what the highlights have been for you?
I think one of the big highlights has been the people.
Yeah.
From around the world, literally everywhere, from Pacific Islands to Africa to across Europe and you know, the US and Asia. It's been really incredible to see the reach that the Ocean Decade has had. And then other highlights have included some really great conversations. Some of them, you know, bilateral, but some of them in groups, on where we are, what can we do to move the needle forward, how can we move things forward faster, how can we actually, as Schmidt Ocean Institute, help others to do the science at sea that they would like to do. So we have, in that respect, a 10-year map of mm-hmm. where we're sailing, and scientists can apply for ship time for any time in those 10 years. But what it does is allow us a long lead time for planning with them. And it allows scientists a long lead time to plan campaigns and expeditions as well. And actually, I'm just going to add, one of the highlights was we just announced the results from our last expedition. It was along the Salazar-Gomez Ridge, which extends from Chile out, you know, past Rapa Nui, which is Easter Island. And it was looking at and mapping the seafloor, the seamounts. It's a mountain chain, right? And also looking for biodiversity and assessing where there are faunal breakage in biodiversity. And they found 160 species, of which 50 they think are new to science, and 110 of them have never been seen in this part of the world before, which means that the range extensions where they've traveled from across the Pacific has now been expanded enormously.
Goodness
me. So it's
me.
Amazing. Yeah, amazing.
I remember a year or two ago when we first met each other, you were getting rather excited about one new species. Was that the ram's horns?
The ram's horn squid. You've got a great memory.
Thank you very much. Well, it was the story you told. It's just stayed with me. But you're now talking about, did you say 60 new species?
50 new species. 50 we had a cruise in January that was looking at the Nazca Ridge and the Juan Fernandez Ridge. And they think they've come across 100 new species. So our ability and the scientists' ability to detect new species, the reason is twofold, I think, in my opinion. One is that we have the technology, The other is we're going to places that people have not taken such technology to before. So having that ROV to gather visual data as well as samples for identification has been, well, it's proving to be pretty invaluable in this part of the world. And the ultimate goal is that this data will assist in establishing a high seas marine protected area.
Oh, wonderful.
Along the Salazar Gomez Ridge.
So once again, the technology is important. The data is important to encourage and to allow us then to take the steps, these protected areas that we're all going to benefit from, all of us on this planet, going forward.
Yes. So there are no high seas marine protected areas yet. But there are, you know, this is an area that has been earmarked as potential. And so this data that's been collected by the scientists, we actually also had people, observers from Chile on board as well. So they have the data, they have the samples, they can now take that and carry that forward. And we hope it will really help to establish protection for an area where we don't know all the species. And an area that has got such a wide variety. I mean, think about it. We're here in April. In late February, even in early March, we didn't know. We were 100 species, you know, 160 species poorer, essentially, of knowing what was out there. It's just amazing in just a few weeks.
And these creatures are most fantastical.
Some of them certainly are fantastical, yes. There are a whole range of stuff. Actually, ranging squids, corals, you know. But we'll see what comes out when they have a chance to actually look at the species identification portion of this. But there's a lot of creatures out there.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay, so this afternoon we'll be hearing the announcements and commitments from the conference. What are you hoping will be announced?
Well, that's a very, very good question. I know, you know, we've heard discussions over the last few days on inclusivity and indigenous. And like I said, we had people, in fact, from Rapa Nui on board as well on that cruise. But, you know, statistic that there's about 80% of the Earth's biodiversity, surface biodiversity, is under the protection of indigenous populations. 80%. And we talk about preserving 30% by 2030. So that's a huge, like, we really need to have everybody in and on board.
Yes.
So something around there. I think marine pollution, that's another topic, a hot topic. We've all heard of microplastics.
Yes.
I think work is just now starting on things like forever chemicals in the water. But it's not just things in the water, it's also light pollution from cities that are affecting the diurnal cycle of water, you know, ocean animals or coastal ocean animals that live nearby, because they think it's daytime and it's not daytime, but the lights are on. So I think this week was launched as an Ocean Decade endorsed action, something about artificial light and the network and the impact that's having and how do you mitigate for that. So there's things on pollution, and I would include light pollution in that bracket. And I think Plymouth Marine Lab is leading that with a coalition of others.
What does your gut tell you? Are we going far enough and fast enough in our pledges, our commitments, in our efforts?
Well, I think a super fundamental piece of the science we need for the ocean we want is seafloor mapping. We have just about reached 25% of the seafloor has been mapped to a high resolution.
And we're halfway through the decade.
And so I think we really need to ramp that up. Seafloor mapping is so important as a base for everything, not just the science, like finding seamounts, those are areas of biological diversity, right? But for the blue economy, for shipping, for safety, for it's for everything. The first thing any scientist does, even if their focus is biodiversity, is we need a map of the seafloor. Mm. So I'll give you an example. Our first cruise on this vessel, Falkor 2, last March, we had scientists who went out to the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, and they first thing they did was use the mapping technology on board the vessel to map. Then they sent AUVs down to do a high-resolution map of 1 meter. Then they sent down an ability chemical, CTD Toyo, to look for hydrothermal vent activity. And pretty much every time we then sent ROV Sebastian down, we found hydrothermal vent activity. And it's an amazing technological approach. Super, super efficient. They found 3 new hydrothermal vent fields with dozens of new black smokers. But when we sent the camera down, it was teeming with life. Like, absolute. I think you saw some on the video,
yes.
The shrimp that were just jumping everywhere. A huge amount of life down there. And this was Mid-Atlantic Ridge, and it was in an area that 30 to 40 years ago had been assessed, and they thought there was no life down there because they didn't have the technology, and it had been earmarked for deep sea mining.
I was going to say.
Yeah. And
when
so
you don't have
the
data.
Yeah.
The assumptions that we make can lead us into some serious problems.
Yeah, we really, really need the data. So we desperately need a full seafloor map. So that would be, you know, going back to what would I like to see, that would be my, that's the fundamental underlying piece that we need to get, whether we do other things or not. We need, for marine spatial planning, for marine protected areas, all of this is sustainable development goal activity.
Jyotika, thank you for joining us. Thank you for coming over to the booth. It's always a pleasure to see you.
It's such an honor. Thank you so much again. I mean, we met a couple of years ago, and here we are again.
Here we are again. Before we wrap up this episode, I want to bring you a couple of highlights from the conversations we've been having across the past 2 days. I want to share with you some of the calls to action we've been hearing in the podcast studio. Paula Garcia Rodriguez is a member of the Early Career Ocean Professionals Program, known as ECOPS, endorsed by the Ocean Decade. Paula called on the industry to support young professionals, and for these young professionals to be bold in their approach to their careers.
Including the voice of young generations, I think, is crucial to the success of the UN Ocean Decade and also just to improving the health of our oceans. By the time that the UN Ocean Decade concludes in 2030, we will be well into our careers. The Ocean Decade is all about collaboration and partnership, and only together we can actually improve our oceans' health. I'd say be bold, create opportunities and seize these opportunities. Talk to people that you meet and ask them questions, be interested and learn as much as you can. And you will be able to reach your goals and be part of ocean science initiatives and really contribute to increasing our ocean's health and ocean sustainability. I really think that if we support each other and empower each other to do so, we will definitely be able to achieve the aims of the Ocean Decade.
Mark Heine, Fugro's CEO, calls on us to push the boundaries, move faster, and crucially, be honest about the challenges, the sacrifices, and the compromises.
The key thing is that you want to push the boundaries and try to go as fast as we can, and then maybe a little bit faster. So the world needs to realize that we should stop coal, which we haven't done, which is ridiculous, and then we should reduce oil. And then accept gas for a bit longer. So don't start to argue about gas, because it's a lot cleaner and greener than coal. And then we need to accelerate on the renewable side, and we need to go faster and faster there. And that's what we're trying to do, to really push the boundaries on all these fronts. but also tell the honest story. What is really possible and what's not possible yet. And for instance, if you want to have renewable parks out there, wind parks out there, then you also need to have the resources, so to say, to build these turbines and all these kind of things. So you need to tell the honest story, the whole story, and that's not always black or white. That's also gray areas, and that's not easy, but we're really pushing the boundaries there.
Pooja Mahapatra says we need to bring the fight for a sustainable ocean into our daily lives. It should not be compartmentalized and only challenged in our work life. Instead, it should be part of who we are and each action we take.
I think in our daily lives, it all must come from a mindset change. Every action we do, we need to think, what is going to be the effect of this on the environment? So we need to think beyond ourselves and think of the community as a whole. And that can be very simple steps. Turning off the light when you leave the room. Using less plastic. Carrying a cloth bag if you're going out shopping, and making sure that you don't contribute to the plastic problem. Taking the bike when you can, instead of sitting in the car or carpooling. These are very simple things that are really small changes in lifestyle that can really make a big difference if everyone had the same ideas.
We are here at the podcast studio in the lobby of the UN Ocean Decade Conference for one more day. Come and stop by if you're here. In the meantime, if you enjoyed listening to this episode, leave a rating in the podcast app you're listening on and help us reach a wider audience by sharing this episode with your network, your family and friends. We will be bringing you a selection of interviews and lessons from the conference over the coming weeks. So keep an eye on our feed for those. Until next time, be safe, be remarkable, be the difference.